Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Hotel Barigani. What's happening in peace? January 12th through the 13th, Jacksonville, Florida, we will have Summit of the Moors. This is a collective effort to bring about economic security that is a great opportunity for our people to forecast their own future, beginning with a collective approach that could benefit all. The educators, the speakers are all diverse to represent the people who are also diverse in their ideologies. On deck, we have Kadara Bey, Dr. Aline Bey, Julani Bey, Tahaka Amina L. Bey, Abundance Child, Sundiata L., Daraya Bey, the Federation of Southern Cooperative, German Shannon L., Sharif Noble, and myself, Asar Dalo Sekou Abur L. Topics will be food security, such things as aquaponics, gold and silver purchasing, technology, cooperative application, the administrative process, and lots more. We also have what's called private side sessions. These sessions will not be recorded, any recording, audio or visual, for the public. You have to be in person in order to get these jewels. And we also have some special guests who didn't want to be advertised that will come and drop more information. I'm urging everyone to go to www.dalosekou.com and register. This is free. This is a free event. It is www.dalosekou.com. DialoSekou.com. January 12th through the 13th, Jacksonville, Florida, Summit of the Moors. Peace.
Welcome, Moors. Moors Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bey. And this evening, we'll be dealing with federal and civil court procedures. Our special guest, Brother Timitiyu Bey, will be with us this evening as we begin to open up information for your learning. Keep in mind that we are offering a free article as usual, the 14th Amendment Exposed, Commerce Game, the History of the United States and its Bankruptcy. Also, we have created one of the most comprehensive libraries inside the United States, and this thing is about to go online, but prior to doing that, I ask you to contact me. If you want to get your copy of it, just contact me, area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We put you in there, show you around in there, show you where the documents are, where all your audio and video plugs are, all your articles to read, tons of information for your education. It's child-friendly if you got children in school, and they are putting information inside their head. You want to have the truth, give them a chance to be able to present the truth and know the truth, because it is the truth that will set you free. There's an abundance of information. If you have problems with your mortgage company, you got problems with your bill collectors, if you're going to court, the administrative procedure, the civil, federal procedures, all that's there. Your history is there. Your culture is there. Everything you need to know about religion is there. All you got to do is contact me, Tahaka Amana L. Bey, area code 904-303-9061. 9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we'll get you in there. Now, I'm going to go ahead and open up the line and make sure that my guest is with us. Area code 347, are you with us?
Islam Noble.
Islam Noble. Peace, peace, my brother. Peace, peace. I'm ready to go here. But before we do, I want to give praises and thanks to Allah and thanks to you for being here so that we can get this information over to our people and so that they can learn. But before I get started, at the top of this hour, could you please tell the audience how they can get in touch with you? Let's do that first at the top.
Yes, they can contact me at 347-626-1357. That's 347-626-1357. They can either call me at that number, or they can send me a text at that same number, or they can send me it by the way of email if they choose to do so. And, of course, that's Fille de Mur, which is F like in France, U like in Up, R like in Red, D like in David, E like in Eric, M like in Mom, U like in Up, I like in ID, R like in Red at yahoo.com. That's Fille de Mur, FURDEMUIR at yahoo.com. They can reach me at those two locations, Noble. Peace.
Okay, fantastic. Now, what I want to try to do today is I try to make sure that the brothers and sisters have the ABCs of doing things. Because when you do your thing down up in that courtroom, a lot of times you're using things and you're using terminology and stuff that a lot of them may not be aware of. So my first question to you is, let's say that I have I'm supposed to be the court on a, we're going to say, on a burglary charge. But, I went to jail, I bond out, they say I got to come back to court on this particular day. What is the first thing that I do when I get to that courthouse?
Well, more, this is something that people need to be aware of. It's very important. That's a good question, Brother Tahaka. They should be filing what you call is an omnibus motion, all right? An omnibus motion is a plethora of motions where the district attorney has to answer. All right? That's something that most of these court-appointed attorneys do not do. They sit around and just listen to how they're going to comply to whatever the district attorney or the prosecuting attorney is going to be asking for. And a lot of times, brother or sister who have these court-appointed attorneys get jerked around, and the attorney's not doing their job. So it's called an omnibus motion. The Brady material is involved with that motion. We need to really know that procedure, And the reason why I'm saying that, Brother Tahaka, because a lot of our brothers and sisters out there is under some strong impression when they say, motions can be denied, right? And they say, I don't want to go that route. But the point is, you have to educate yourself because that's parliamentary procedure, all right? Motion means to move. How do you move the court? By a motion with an affidavit and support, all right? So that's a procedure. And the reason why Moors are having problems is because they don't know the procedure. Or what procedure to use. So if you're not comfortable by using a motion, that, of course, you've been poisoning your mind by saying that it could be denied, which, of course, it can be. We're not saying that it can't be denied, but the point is why is it being denied? 9 to 10 is because we're not doing due diligence in the right area, the right place, all right? Good example is Marcus Garvey. When you go to the philosophy and opinions of Marcus Garvey on page 167, 168, Marcus Garvey filed a motion with the court, but the court dismissed Marcus Garvey's motion. Why? Because the affidavit was not in compliance with the statute. Not the motion, it was the affidavit. So we got to look at that. So there's times where your motion may be right and your affidavit ain't right, or your motion may not be right and your affidavit is right. You know what I'm saying? So, we have to really know what's the problem. All right. And again, that is parliamentary procedure. That's the signs that come from us, which we don't seem to realize. Robert Rules of Order is the book one should get and study, all right, so that way they can see how parliamentary procedure operates, all right. The Congress uses that. The Senate uses that. All right. The House of Representatives, they use that. Corporate board meetings use that to govern themselves. And even in the courtroom, they use parliamentary procedure. All right. And basically, Brother Tahaka, that's what people have to do is begin to start to educate themselves. So an omnibus motion along with the Brady material is needed, all right, because what that does, Brother Tahaka, is that the DA's office is obliged by law to answer every single last one of those motions. An omnibus motion, so people can know, you can go to the Black Law Dictionary and look up the word omnibus. It's a conglomerate of different motions. Like, for instance, the Bill of Particulars can be in there. A motion for speedy trial can be in there, which means they have 90 days to bring a trial. The case to trial, and 9 out of 10, everybody knows that the DA never be ready. And which is up in New York, they call that a 30-30 motion. That's what they call it up here in New York. Other state statutes may use other governing statutes for a speedy trial. But it's all the same. Statute may vary, but it's still the same language. All right? And if they don't afford you a speedy trial according to the Constitution, that case can automatically be thrown out. All right? You got to move on that. So, you know, then the Bill of Particulars, they got to answer that. All right? Which means the information that you would have, they have to come forth with, it's sort of like a discovery, is what you would say, but they call it a Bill of Particulars. Because remember now, they are issuing a bill. All right? And you have to have a Bill of Particulars. Now, what is a bill? A bill is based upon equity, all right, because there's a charge, so you're being charged. So you gotta know the language, and that's the reason why I break it down and articulate it. Why? Because when you keep being told that motions can be denied, you really never know to learn the process. So if once you learn the process, which is the criminal procedure process, that's basically what it is in any of the states, all right, once you learn that process, all right, then you begin to know how they move, so you know how to counter that. Now, again, like I said, Brother Tahaka, there may be those out there who may not even be comfortable with the omnibus motion, all right? If you're saying that the court don't got no jurisdiction, all right, if you're being charged with burglary, as you stated, all right, which doesn't make sense to me to say that. Why? Because burglary is the statute. They have subject matter jurisdiction over that statute, and if that statute has been applied to you, all right, then this is something that you got to deal with. Now, you can either deal with it by motion. If you feel that the court don't got no jurisdiction, then that means you would have to file what you call is a judicial notice, is what I said last week, not an affidavit. Why? Because when you look in their statutes, is an affidavit within their statutes? Yes, it is. Affidavits is in their statute, just like a motion is in their statute. So if they don't got no jurisdiction, why file an affidavit in their court if they have no jurisdiction? You can do either two things. You can file a notice of removal, bring it into federal court, or you can file a judicial notice. Either one, if you're not comfortable filing the motion. One should study the motions. Why? Because the motions is an application that attorneys must apply. And 9 out of 10, when these attorneys don't apply, like, for instance, you may have some lawyers out there who may do their own case. Good. All right. That application may not be what they may look for. They may want to use the notice of removal, or they may want to use the judicial notice. But there's some brothers and sisters out there who got no choice. They may not even have the knowledge of a more, and they got to go through the system. So this information now given is basically to the masses of our people who may not be aware that an omnibus motion is the motion that you're supposed to file, because that way you at least learn the procedure and find out are they making the correct responses, or they have the correct information. How you even know that the charge they may charge you may be of a higher charge when it's supposed to be lower, all right? You know, for instance, like what happens is that the DA will turn around and start making deals with you, you know, which is called a plea bargaining. And most people today don't even know that what? Plea bargaining is a crime. U.S. versus Singleton is a U.S. case, all right, that plea bargaining is a crime, which where the DA or the prosecutor will come back and give you what you call as a plea bargain. And most people is aware of what I'm talking about. And I don't think, I'm not sure on this show that I gave an example of a Moore up in Mount Vernon, New York. He did plea bargain with the DA, and what he did is he filed an appeal and won his case on the appeal. You know, Brother Tahaka, so, you know, just to give people insight that you can work with the system or you can work out of the system. It's either way you can do it. I mean, you know, I was raised out of the Gray Seal, And we have a saying in the Great Seal, we got seven ways in and seven ways out. So we can work within the system or without the system, but I think people should be able to have a choice.
Okay, fantastic. Now, let's deal with the education for terminology so that everybody will be able to get a hold to the right information to study so that they will know the difference and understand what an omnibus motion is, what an affidavit is. What do you recommend? What books do you recommend that we study for that?
Well, again, Tahaka, this is what I bring to the forefront of our brothers and sisters out there. This is what I teach in class. When you get the sixth edition of the Black Star Dictionary, the first word you should acknowledge in reference to yourself is the word is civilian, all right? Because civics is something that was not taught in school, all right, on a large level, all right? I was just discussing this with Amor earlier today, and he says, Amor, you're 100% correct in what you're saying, all right? Civics is not being taught in school, all right? For instance, on the middle school, which some call junior high school and colleges, all right? And we're not talking about the colleges in reference to law. We're just talking about the regular university or academic courses that people take up. And this more that I was kicking it with, he said he took a business and finance, and he says he didn't learn any of that in high school, neither junior high school. And what I'm talking about, Brother Tahaka, is one should be able to learn how to structure a motion. One should be able to learn how to structure an affidavit. All right? And so we're not educated to construct an affidavit or a motion. So you'll say, what books that you can get that you recommend? Well, there's one book. It's called The Styles Manual. It's the red book, all right? It's a book that shows you how to structure a motion, how to structure an affidavit, all right? They do have a lot of terms in there. There's phrases. They show you what to use and what not to use when you construct your pleadings, which is what you would call a motion or an affidavit. Those are called pleadings. You know, the pleadings cover the spectrum of an affidavit or a motion, all right? The Black's Law Dictionary itself, it has a lot of legalese or legal terms in there, like omnibus motion, affidavit, the word motion, the word sui juris, the word in propria persona, the word in personam jurisdiction, subject matter jurisdiction, quasi-jurisdiction, all right? I mean, the terms are in the Black's Law Dictionary, which, of course, you provide for those out there, Brother Tahaka, from your library, that they can go and look into this library, all right, and they can see these terms. So what I'm saying is those who are listening, you should be able to take your notes, as Brother Tahaka say, your pen, your paper, and write this information down, and just go to the library and start looking up these terms. So when you see the word omnibus motion, then you'll know and have an idea what they're talking about. Again, the Styles Manual, Brian Gardner, he wrote the seventh edition, or he edited, I should say, the seventh edition of the Black Law Dictionary, all right? And also he had edited a book called the Red Book Styles Manual. You can get that book at Barnes & Noble for $40. It's a bit steep, but I found out that those, if you can go online, you can probably get it even cheaper, all right? But those books are books that one needs to get in order to have some type of legal insight and knowledge and schooling on the term that's being used, Brother Tahaka.
Okay. All right. I have to agree with you 100% before we deal with anything. The first thing we need to do is find out what we're dealing with. And if we look up the meaning of words and stuff, especially prior to ever having a case. A lot of us will wait till there's a problem before we try to do anything. But in my opinion, one of the most important things that we need to understand today is law. And when we start making that a part of our regular routine to understand that when there's a problem, we're not sitting there in the courtroom, words are being said, and we don't understand what they're doing. Because that's just like listening to a man that speak a whole nother language, you see. So I have to agree. Understanding the terminology, looking up these words, Black's Law Dictionary, I have them, Volume 1, through 9, Bloomsbury, Bouvier's, the Essentials, Oxford, all of that. Just give me a call, 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and I'll get you in there. Okay? Thank you so much for giving us that. That's vital information. That's something that's very important. We have to understand the words and terminology and look these words up so we'll have a full understanding of the meaning of the words, and that way we can best apply them to our circumstances, or at least understand what's going on inside the courtroom when we are there. I want to also ask you, and while I'm at this, now, when it comes to somebody that's being accused of murder, that is being railroaded, so to speak, what is the best defense, in your opinion, that you think can be prepared for them not using a lawyer?
Well, Noble, again, education is the key, because we as a people, again, I have to use that word civilian. When you go to the Black Spell Dictionary, look at the word civilian, so people can get the basis and idea, Brother Tahaka, and then I can go on and give the insight of what they need to see for a person who's being accused of murder. But this is what you got to see first. When you go to the Black Spell Dictionary, look at the word civilian means one who's skilled or versed in law, all right? If you're not skilled or versed in law, all right, as Brother Tahaka said, not using a lawyer, well, how are you going to defend yourself from a justice system, criminal justice system, that these people have went to universities and studied and learned and have degrees on how to put you behind in jail? That's what they study. That's what these people study. There was a saying, Brother Tahaka, about the Black Spell Dictionary. That was a book that can put you in jail, and that's the book that can get you out of jail. I don't know if you ever heard that expression before, but that was an expression that was directed as a reference towards the Black Spell Dictionary. Have you ever heard that expression before?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I heard it before.
Yes, exactly. That's the book that can put you in jail, and that's the book that can get you out of jail. So it's crucial and critical that we pick up a Black Spell Dictionary and we begin to start reading the terminology. Because, again, if one is being accused of murder, all right, you know, again, what are you talking about? The criminal procedure. Every state has a criminal procedure, because that's the same procedure that the district attorney goes by, all right? And within that same procedure, all right, they construct their motions, the same motions that you're saying, well, motions can be denied. Well, why are we keep stuck on or fixated on motions to be denied when these people's motions are not denied? When they file motions, Brother Tahaka, if you know what I'm saying, their motions are being granted. True? So now, why is their motions being granted and yours being denied? And I know why ours are being denied as opposed to theirs being granted. It's because we are not following the statutes. We're not reading the rules and regulations. I mean, come on, for Tahaka. That's like playing a game of chess. You can't make checker moves in a game of chess, correct?
That's right.
So now you know why your motion is being denied. They don't see why it's being denied. You know, how is it that the DA's motion is being granted in a criminal case? How is it, if it's a civil lawsuit, that an attorney from the other side, his motion is being granted? See, we don't study that. We too busy studying or taking somebody's word, well, motions could be denied. Is this another application that we can go? No, brother, let's don't go there. Let's go study and find out why their motion is being granted and yours are being denied. What are you doing incorrect why it's being denied? Which will you be looking at so it can be granted? You see what I'm saying? Because evidently they're putting motions together and they're granting it. All right? And they're granting it. So we need to study their motions and how that their motions was being granted, all right? And this is what I also say too, Tahaka, which is very important. If one is in a courtroom and if your motion is being denied, you have to make sure you say to that so-called judge, right, because they're really attorneys sitting in judicial robes. That's what they really are to me. But if you come up to one of them before the bench, all right, and you have a motion and it was denied, the first thing you have to say, is that in order? All right? Motion denied, is that in order? That's the first thing you have to say, is that in order? You say, yes, I'd like to have that order, please. All right? The reason why I said you need to have that order, because you can appeal it. I have appealed plenty of cases in another venue, another court, because there are higher courts than those lower courts that you're having these issues at. And you'd be surprised how the lower court, the higher court, overturned the lower court's decision. All right? You'd be surprised how that happened. All right? So, again, Brother Tahaka, you know, it's not really easy to say, you know, if a person was charged with murder, what should he do? I mean, you have to be educated first in the legal system. And I'm not talking about going to law school. I'm talking about picking up that Black's Law Dictionary and start seeing what the terms, like, for instance, if you've been charged with charges, all right? Just look at the charges, see what you're charged with, all right? There's a penal code, right, or a criminal code that they use to charge you with. You got to look up to see what that code is, all right? Because 9 out of 10, when you're in that courtroom, when that prosecutor or DA start reading the charges, they're always reading it by its code, you know, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And so when they start reading the codes, right, but they don't articulate what's going on within the code. They just cite code so and so and so and so, you know what I'm saying? And then they move on to the next code, and then they give their legal argument before the court. You know what I'm saying? Based upon what? A procedure. This is what they do. Now, they could either do that in writing in the form of a motion, or they can give it in the form of an oral argument. And even when you give an oral argument, which most brothers and sisters may not be aware, that's a motion. Even under oral argument, a motion can either be from an oral argument or it can be on paper. All right? So if you make an argument on before the court, all right, and you're seeking to get some kind of relief or remedy for that, the court either can deny it or they can grant it. That is a motion orally. That's an oral motion. You have a written motion and an oral motion, and most people are just not aware of that. And I think I have to bring that out too, Brother Tahaka.
Okay. Brother, what I'm going to have to do, and I don't have no choice, I got to do this. I'm going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. But, ladies and gentlemen, before I go, if you have a court case or if you have questions, now's the time to raise your hand, and when we come back, we'll open up the lines, we'll get right on it, and see if we can give you some aid, okay?
Dance electric. The rhythm is love.
are back. Brother Kamitu Yube is with us this evening, and we're discussing federal and civil procedure. Keep in mind that the brother is teaching you exactly how to understand the terminology, how to handle yourself in that courtroom, what to understand without a lawyer. See, we have somebody with the hand raised, so I'm going to open up area code 720. Now, keep in mind, ladies and gentlemen, if you got a case, now's the time to raise your hand so that we can deal with this thing. If you got questions, comments, go ahead and raise your hand. I'll recognize them, and we'll open up the lines and get you in here. Area code 720. Could you tell us who you are, where you're calling from, what's your question and comment?
This is Zaria, and I'm in Texas.
Okay. What's on
your okay. Mind? Actually, my case is in Colorado. It's dealing with my husband and I. We were charged with cruelty to animal, and we went to trial. It happened in April, went to trial in December 4th, found guilty. We represented ourselves, and now we have sentencing on January 7th. We want to file an appeal, and we have a few of the paperwork that we are supposed to file, but wanted to know if there's any other things that we're missing when it comes to this, because we also want to file a Title 42 lawsuits against the parties involved, because, of course, they violated our civil rights in the whole process.
Okay. You're correct about filing that lawsuit. What you should have done is file that lawsuit sooner, when you first got charged. The reason why I stated that is because you could have offset the criminal case, because the charge for quote-unquote animal cruelty is actually a lawsuit in criminal court. But you could have sued them also in civil court, all right? And you could have offset their suit against you through that civil suit. And I think that is something very important for us to be aware of, because that's what I did for Moore out here in Long Island, where he was charged with a traffic issue. And so we brought it to federal court, all right? And that offset them to a certain point, because they couldn't understand, you know, about the suit we sued them. And so that threw them to another place. So it also put them on hold when you do that. So you are correct about that Title 42 1983 suit, that you could sue them, all right? I wish I would have known this sooner, sis, because, again, the statute is what I always talk about, you know, reading the statutes to see what you was charged with, and you can show that the statute don't apply to you, but you would never know that if you haven't read the statute, because you don't know when the statute was enacted, if the statute still stands the law when it was amended. You know, stuff like that that you need to be aware of. I mean, there's other information most people are not aware of that is that statute bonded, all right, because the State Department, where you're located, is in the Archives Department in the state of Texas. You could find out if that statute is bonded. And if it's bonded, all right, that bond could have been used in your case. If not, you can get that statute bonded within yourself. I mean, that's another process. I don't really have time to really go into it in detail because our show is short. But you do have my number. You can give me a call. Tomorrow would be the best time. Tomorrow evening would be the best time to give me a call.
Let's get that number again.
All right. That number is 347-626-1357. Again, that's 347-626-1357. You can call me tomorrow evening. It would be better because I'm in the middle of putting a pleading together for a mortgage issue. And after I get off this phone, I'm going to be spending the rest of the night on this pleading. I got to get it out tomorrow. So, so I'm not going to be able to take no calls tonight when I'm that tight. Yes, sis, the lawsuit is correct. I mean, again, you said something about the sentence was when? What was set for?
I'm sorry, say that again.
You said that the sentence was set for what date?
The sentencing is January 7th.
January
7th. Of next year. Mm-hmm.
Of next, all right, that's the sentencing date. So did you put in your appeals already?
We're doing this no later than Wednesday of this week.
All right, good, because you should be setting your appeals in. You should have, what is the last time you've been to court?
The trial date was December 4th.
December
4th. That's the last
time.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and which means that December 5th, you should have put in your appeals, because if you would have put your appeals in, that means you would have been putting a stay in. You get me?
Oh, okay.
We
found out that you can file an appeal 45 days after the trial and then 45 days after the sentencing.
True,
and also
but you don't want to wait for the – you don't want – that's true, but you don't want to wait for the sentencing. You want to – because the sentencing means you got to go in and they're going to handcuff you and take you to a correctional facility. You get me? So,
okay.
Would you and I do hear what you're saying, but I would have took the – well, they said 45 days. But within the 45 days of the trial, you should have filed your appeal. So what I'm saying is that the trial was on the 4th of December.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it ended on the 4th or it ran some consecutive days.
Okay. Yeah, we're really late. I'm just going by what my husband wanted us to do. You know, I'm really kind of lost at what's going on. I'm trying to keep up.
Well, you're not lost, sis. What I'm saying is that you need to file, like you said, no later than Wednesday. Put your appeal in right away, because when you put your appeal in, you know, certain states, when you put an appeal, it becomes an automatic stay, all right? And what you can do is look to see if that state allowed that appeal to become an automatic stay, because suppose you win your case on the appeals, all right? They can't just incarcerate you, you know, if you win your case on the appeal. So filing an appeal is very important, so you should move on that, all right? Technically, you should move on it tomorrow. I mean, I don't know if
okay.
The courts is going to be open where you at. Tomorrow is going to be open where I'm at. I got to file papers tomorrow, and the courts are going to be closed on Tuesday and be back open again on Wednesday. So, some, you know, I try to get my, you know, my moves as much as I can as possible. So you should move on it right away, sis, to put that appeals in it right away. Once you put that appeals, find out to see if you get an automatic stay on that sentence, because once you get an automatic stay on that sentence, all right, that case, that sentence will have to be on hold until your appeals process is over.
Automatic stay, you said?
Yes. Automatic, what I'm saying is when you file an appeal, certain states normally give you an automatic stay on the appeal. While your case is being appealed, they will stay the sentence. Is that clear?
Yes, I understand.
All right, but what I'm saying also equally, find out if you get the automatic stay, because if you don't, you may have to apply for an automatic stay. Because some states,
okay,
like New York,
okay,
right, sometimes you have to apply for by motion. And see what I'm saying? And that's why I say some of these brothers out here are saying motions can be denied. You can't go off like that, because the point is if you're in a certain situation like you, you're going to have to file a motion. You can't file no judicial notice or anything. That wouldn't be the proper application. So you have to be aware that whatever the circumstances are in that courtroom, you have to file the right pleading, the right application, so that way you can be heard. If you just filed something that because you figure you need to file and the court got no jurisdiction, then you're wondering why you're doing jail time, because they're not adhering to that, because you're not complying to the rules of the court. All right? And so, again, if you are in that situation, you've been in trial, all right, and you need to file what you call as an appeal. But you need to find out, I'm articulating, you need to find out when you file your appeal, is that an automatic stay when you file your appeal? If not, you may have to file a motion for an automatic stay on the appeal. While the case is being appealed, you want to stay the sentence. You get me?
Okay, yes.
All right, I want to articulate that so it can be clear.
Now, this is another issue that we're having. When it comes to the statute, it says once you're found guilty that the defendant has to pay for an animal cruelty evaluation before sentencing. And we haven't done that yet. We wanted to get an outside source other than who they provided for us. So she hasn't received that as well. And I'm kind of kind of curious, like, is that going to be an issue? Because if it's, like, too much money, will that be an issue for her? Not sure that you know about it, but that's the other issue when it comes to the case is when you get charged and you're found guilty, you have to get an animal cruelty evaluator before you get sentenced.
Well, you know, I know what you're talking about because I've dealt with cases not based upon animal cruelty but based upon psychiatric evaluation, all right? And 9 out of 10, when if the state or the court is ordering it, normally they will pay for it. Or sometimes they would try to make you pay for it out of your own pocket, all right? But 9 out of 10, usually the state would pay for that, you know what I'm saying? That's basically how that happens. But it all depends on what state you're in because, again, each state seems to have their own procedure on how they do things, all right?
But we have to pay for it.
But that's my thing because each state is different. That's why I can't base everything off of New York. And the only reason why I can say that is because I've traveled to other states and I've entered into litigations in other states, and this is how I learn and know that every state administrative procedure is different. You see what I'm saying? And again, this proves my point that how would I know it's different if I have not litigated, all right, by motion, all right? Motion is a procedure. So if you don't know the motion procedure, how would you know what moves to make in the courtroom? You got to at least know that. Even if you don't want to go by a motion, as they say, you should at least know the knowledge of it so you know what the procedure is next and what you can do to counter that. But you have to learn what the procedures is in filing a motion, all right, so that way you know how to counter whatever move they're making, all right? Like, for instance, with Brother Cheyenne's case, when he was first charged, he should have immediately did what you call the notice of removal. This is how you counter their motion because when the district attorney brought the charges in court, they bringing the charges in by what you call a misdemeanor complaint or felony complaint, and again, that's by a motion, all right? So you have to know these things because why? So you can be able to counter it. So when you make mention about a Title 42 1983 lawsuit, yes, you're 100% correct, but you should have done that when you was first charged. Because if you was first charged, you should immediately file a lawsuit against them, and that right there would have put a damper on their charges. Because the point is that you could have won your lawsuit, and they could have been paying you for damage because being charged, that's slander. Mm-hmm. That's slander and that's libel. You can charge them for a defamation of character and libel suit, all right? Because any charge, the way I see it as a more, is a libel suit. If you put that on my status, and, you know what I'm saying, that's a libel because you're drawing me out to be something that I'm not. And so I'm saying, so the statute cannot apply to me. That's fraud to convenience of language because you want to change my status from being Moorish American noble, you know what I'm saying, into being some kind of criminal. All right, and so that's the defamation of character, and that's a libel, and that's definitely a lawsuit.
Okay. Now, I did want to ask about the UCC financing statement. I did do one about 2 years ago, and I put a lien on my birth certificate name. And during studying, I was told that once you do that, it'll be kind of a harder thing for them to incarcerate your body into jail. I need to know how true that is because I don't know anybody that's actually been in that situation.
Sis, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm very familiar with the process, and sis, I'll be the first one to tell you, first of all, there's a certain procedure you have to follow when it comes to the courtroom, all right? Now, this is some hardcore stuff I'm about to drop on you, so you'll know where I'm talking about, all right? Because what I'm about to drop on you and those who are listening, again, this is something that no more out there is talking about. First of all, if you want to shut these people down, all right, the UCC-1 is not where you will shut them down at. How you shut these people down, sis, is this. First of all, you being charged. So there's a case number, docket number, or an index number, correct?
Mm-hmm.
All right, I just want you to follow me because I want to take my time and make sure that you be clear what I'm saying. So you won't be lost because this is something different, all right? You can look up or find the QSUP number because you will hear people say, oh, I went on to Fidelity.com and I looked up the QSUP number on my birth certificate, all right? And it showed that my birth certificate in value face value was worth this amount. All right. I hear that, and that's correct what they're saying. But I've never heard nobody talk about when you be in charge, sis, to look up the QSUP number on the docket index or case number, because you will find out when you do get that QSUP number on that case number, you will find the judge's name assigned to that case in the QSUP. So that means that the judge have what you call as the pecuniary interest in the case. So that automatically would shut the court down because the judge is not supposed to have what you call is a pecuniary interest in the case. And this is why I keep telling brothers and sisters to go get the book, The Debtor and Creditor Law, and study it. Because when you be in charge, what the state is saying, they're the creditor, and they're saying you're the debtor. This is what they're saying, all right? So they converted your status since 1933, Joint House Resolution 192, all right? When they declared the bankruptcy, all right, this is when everybody become a debtor. That's when it started. It didn't start when they first charged you with animal cruelty. It started at 1933. So any child born, all right, automatically within the state, if you got a birth certificate, automatically the word debtor or the status of debtor is transferred onto you. That's what's going on. So people could understand what's happening. And to give you a good example of that, so you know what I'm talking about, it specifically says here, under the debtor creditor law, subsection 138, debtors to state or United States not to be discharged. Neither of the following named persons shall be discharged from imprisonment under the provisions of this article. One, a person owing a debt or duty to the United States. Two, a person owing a debt or duty to the state for taxes or for money received or collected by any person as a public officer or in fiduciary capacity, or a cause of action. Now, when you hear the word cause of action, the first thing you should think about is what? Court. That could either be a criminal court or that could be a civil court. Is a cause of action. You ever heard of that term, probable cause? When a police officer arrests you or some officer within the state or municipality hits you with a summons or disappearance ticket that, because of some type of what? Probable cause. And so because of the probable cause being transferred over to the prosecuting attorney, which they call the DA, they're going to draft up these documents, which is going to be a misdemeanor complaint or a felony complaint, and it'll be based upon what? A cause of action, all right, from the probable cause. Where's this language you see at? In debtor and creditor law. Every state has it. It don't make a difference if the statute varies. The language still remains to be the same. Every state has debtor and creditor law, all right? So, again, the QSUP number is the number that you would have to get on that case index or docket number, all right? Once you get that QSUP number, you can see who's the players. Who's funding it, all right? This is how you shut them down because, again, 27 CFR, which is the Code of Federal Regulation, 72.11, says that all crimes are commercial. This is what it says here. All crimes are commercial. So what I teach in my class is that criminal law is from civil law and civil law is from ecclesiastical law, all right? That's basically what that whole scenario is all about, all right? It's the Jewel Society, which is made up of who? Christians and Jews who are implicating this pogrom over our people today. The black codes are still in effect, sis. You know what I'm saying? They just codified it where we won't recognize it because of the Reconstruction period, all right, of 1868, all right? But in the meantime, sis, again, I know I'm giving you a lot of information. I don't mean to bombard you with it, all right? But you got to really do your due diligence to really comprehend what's going on with the politics and the bureaucracy, all right, and these people's structured finance on how they're still keeping us subjugated and sanctioned under their laws, and they're just looking for any one of our brothers and sisters out there, be it mother, father, sister, brother, you know, whoever it is that they can charge with a charge, this is how they feed their industry, all right, because the same charge that they charge you with, sis, there's a bond on this case. There's securities on this case, there's stocks on this case, and it's being sold in the stock market. And, of course, New York City is the capital when it comes to Wall Street, all right? So they're selling you in the form of a stock or a certificate or a bond or a security on the market as a discount security. So this is what they're doing. So that shows you that the judge has a pecuniary interest in this case, and you can find that information out by using the QSUP number.
So when you get the QSUP number, I've looked up the QSUP number for my birth certificate, but I haven't been able to locate it again. And then the website I went to, you have to pay. So I'm just curious, is that still what I need to do to find?
And I know why, because unfortunately a lot of our brothers and sisters abused the information, and when the authorities who had that site up seen that it was being abused, they shut it down. So you're not the first time I've heard that. I heard that numerous of times, sis, you know what I'm saying? But you see how you stated, how you looked up your birth certificate with the QSUP, but you never knew that you can take the same QSUP information and look up your case number on your case. And then you can find out exactly what your case is worth and how much money they're making off of you.
Huh. Okay.
And that's another way you can shut them down, sis, because that means that your case, that means you already paid your debt to society, because once you begin to start doing the securitization process on that index number, on that docket number, on that case number, whatever how they have it set, because they have what you call as indexes, all right? Once you begin to start pulling it, you can begin to see that the case was paid off already. It was already abated already. All right. You can see all the players. You see who and how much it was invested into the case. All right. Which means, depending on what your charges and how many counts, all right, is going to determine how much you owe. You follow me? So, say for instance,
okay,
your charge may be how much time are they talking about?
The maximum is $5,000 or 18 months or both in jail.
Exactly. You see what I'm saying? So now $1,800, you know, we just use that as an example. That's paid off already. That's paid already. They already put your stuff, your case into on the market, and that's paid off already. So once you get the QSUP number, you'll be surprised that they owe you money, because basically that count, but they open in your name, is usury. They're using your account to be able to make money. So that $1,800 has been paid off since the first day. They started processing your case the first day. But you ain't going to be able to find that out until you use the QSUP number. But, again, most people are not aware of that. Nobody is talking about looking up cases with QSUP. They're talking about birth certificates, marriage documents, or Social Security cards. That's what they're looking at. You see what I'm saying? But all of those cases in court is nothing but structured finance. A motion is a structured finance. An affidavit is a structured finance. Those are nothing but structured finance. Then you can, and QSUP numbers are assigned to those structured finance in the court once that account is open. There's an account open on you. All right?
So that's why when you do the conditional acceptance, you state they have to prove that this matter hasn't been paid off yet, because that's basically what it is.
Sis, listen, it's paid off, and I hear what you're saying, and you're correct in what you're saying, but it's paid off. The only way you want to find that out is to get the QSUP number and see the fund, and you'll see the judge's name assigned to it. You see what I'm saying?
Okay.
And you see that it's paid off. So if the fee or the charge is $5,000, of course, they probably got surcharges and other penalties involved, so it'll probably be a little over $5,000, all right? Let's say $6,000, all right? And depending on how many counts, you know what I'm saying? That's been paid off, sis.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, I'll have my husband call you tomorrow, and we can discuss this,
yes,
a little further.
In the evening now, sis, try to make it around 6 or 7. It would be better for me,
okay,
because I'm going to be out running back and forth in these courts doing research.
Eastern
I got to go to
right?
Court. Yeah, Eastern time, yes. Yes, I'm on the East Coast.
All right, no problem. Thank you
very
much.
That's right, because you're two hours ahead of me. I'm 2 hours ahead of you, rather.
Yes.
That's correct. You're in Texas, correct?
Correct.
Yes, that's 2 hours, yeah. Because there's a company out there that I'm dealing with the QSUP, with the securitization process. It's in Texas. It's interesting that you calling me from Texas. It's a company that I deal directly with. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, okay.
I'm doing, as a matter of fact, yeah, and I'm doing a Q-Sub number case right now with her motion that's going to be filed in court. And we're going to be successful. I have a securitization process, and I have to file it with a motion. That's my, going to be my Exhibit A. You know what I'm saying? And we're going to prevail. You know what I'm saying, sis? So the same thing with your case. So we can talk. Just give me a call at 347-626-1357, sis. That's peace.
Perfect, perfect. Thank you.
All right, sis. I'm going to go ahead and mute your mic. And I need everybody to hold on just a second. We got two more callers with the hand raised. We got an area code 904 and a 219. I need y'all to just hold on 1 second, okay?
Islam, Hotel, Barigani. What's happening in peace? January 12th through the 13th, Jacksonville, Florida, we will have Summit of the Moors. This is a collective effort to bring about economic security that is a great opportunity for our people to forecast their own future, beginning with a collective approach that can benefit all. The educators, the speakers are all diverse to represent the people who are also diverse in their ideologies. On deck we have Kadara Bey, Dr. Aline Bey, Julani Bey, Tahaka Amina L. Bey, Abundance Child, Sundiata L., Daraya Bey, the Federation of Southern Cooperative, German Shannon L., Sharif Noble, and myself, Asar Dalo Saku Abur L. Topics will be food security, such things as aquaponics, gold and silver purchasing, technology, cooperative application, the administrative process, and lots more. We also have what's called private side sessions. These sessions will not be recorded, any recording, audio, or visual for the public. You have to be in person in order to get these jewels. And we also have some special guests who didn't want to be advertised that will come and drop more information. I'm urging everyone to go to www.dalosaku.com and register. This is free. This is a free event. It is www.dalosaku.com. DialoSekou.com. It's January 12th through the 13th, Jacksonville, Florida, Summit of the Moors. Peace.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're back. Keep in mind that for those of you who are coming down here to Jacksonville, Florida for the summit, Brother Commit to You Bay, we'll be here in person January the 12th. And my brother said that he's going to be able to do the 12th, but he won't do the 13th. So you all get a chance to meet him in person if you come around here and get a chance to meet me too, and I'll meet you. We're going to area code 219.
Islam. Come on in. My name is Gwendolyn Anderson L. My son spent 2 years in the federal penitentiary for check fraud, and he was charged. Him and some other people were charged. It was a group of them. They tried to put it on him and say he's the leader, and they was like telling off on one another. But anyway, he stayed 2 years, and they want him to pay 40-some thousand. And he's sick now. Since he came home from the penitentiary, he got approved for Social Security, and he only get SSI. And he doesn't have this money to pay. He tried to pay a little, you know, every month, but I feel like that's not right for him to pay it. Although he got this money, and it was wrong for him to get this money, and I heard what you were telling the other caller about a few. I just want to know if they got paid for this case.
Yes, sis. Yes, you on point, sis, and I'm happy to hear that you were listening. All right.
Yeah.
They did get paid for the case, and the same thing would apply to that case too, and anybody else's case. If anybody got child support cases out there, this information applies. Anybody who's got debt out there, that information would apply. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
And, you know, and I was kind of surprised you said that he did 2 years in the federal penitentiary, and he's still saying he got to pay $40,000. I'm kind of surprised.
Okay, I had to mute the mic for a minute for the background noise. I'm going to open it back up. Okay. Sister, you still with us? You on speakerphone?
Yes. No, okay, I'm not on the speakerphone.
Okay, so some kind of way I hear a little background noise. It's kind of
distorted. That's my let me go in another room. That's my grandson making noise and TV. Yeah, that was the TV. Yeah, he spent 2 years in the federal pen. And they sent him home after a year and something to go to the halfway house, and he was sick, and they want him to work, and he couldn't work, and they took him back to a different federal penitentiary for him to finish his sentence out. And that was like maybe like 3 or 4 months that they, when they came back to get him, they let him out in September. They came and got him like the last of September of 2011, and then they let him go back until January of 2012, and he was sick. He was really sick. He had been in and out of, he was in intensive care while he was there, and they didn't contact me. So it's a mess. They did him wrong.
Well, sis, again, the same information applies. The QSUP number, matter of fact, let me emphasize this also. For those who are already incarcerated, you would have to use your account number, all right?
Okay.
Account number is the number where when you are...
Oh, he's home now. He's home.
No. Listen to me what I'm saying, sis. I'm articulating information,
okay.
So it doesn't matter if he's home.
Okay.
Because you asked me a question, and I'm going to articulate this information that you need to know. He has an account number, all right?
Okay.
And that account number was assigned to him as an inmate. You know, you get numbers that's assigned to you when you're an inmate when you go into a correctional facility.
Right.
All right? And what I'm saying that you can also do the QSUP number on that account number, and you can see exactly that count being in the fund and how that was paid off also. All right? So
okay.
What I'm saying is that these corporate sectors are all getting a piece of the pot. All
right?
So right. The court that he was in, that he was being tried, there's a QSUP number on that case that you can see the fund on that to show that it was paid off already during the time that he was going to court, and also in the correctional facility when they assigned him an account number when he entered in as an inmate. All right? You could do the QSUP number on that account, and you would find out that that the correctional facility is getting paid off his stay while he was there for that term that he did to time.
Okay, I had to mute the sister's mic because of the echo in the background. And, sister, I hope he has answered your question for you. I'm going to go on to the next caller, area code 904. Come on in.
Hold up. This is LJ. Who actually has got the money for the birth certificate? I mean, has anybody out there ever got money? I mean, what is that? With the QSUP number.
Well, listen to this, Noble. The word QSUP, all right, you can go to investopedia.com and you can type in QSUP
so it can
give you the term and give you also a thesaurus of what the QSUP is. It's an acronym meaning the Committee on Uniform Securities Identification Procedure, all right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so the QSUP number, of course, is assigned to all structured finance instruments that's out there, all right? The birth certificate is structured finance because it's a certificate, all right?
Yes.
The certificate of title, it's a certificate.
Yes.
Your mortgage loan, all right, because those are certificates. Your car notes, your student loans, all right? All these are certificates, all right? And a QSUP number is assigned to all these different notes, certificates, bonds, securities, you know, stuff of that nature, so you know what I'm referring to. So, brother, as the beloved sister has said from Texas, she said she went online at one time and she did a QSUP study on her birth certificate to find out what the face amount of value is. All right? Now, that's one sector of knowing what it is. The other one is how to execute it to get the money. That's something totally different. All right? That's a procedure for that. All right, and of course, I'm not going to go over that over the line.
Is there also money on our Social Security?
Yes.
Is that money on
same
our Social Security?
Yes. All of it falls in the same category, Noble, because they're all structured finance. And it's the number on the back of the Social Security, the red numbers, not the number in the front on the face of the card, but it's the numbers in the back.
Appreciate you. Thank you, brother. Thank you. Appreciate
all right,
good night. Peace.
Okay. We're going down to our area code 704. Come on in.
Islam.
Islam Muslim.
Islam. All right. This is Byron Bay calling from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Okay, brother, let me have
it. I had a case that was in Virginia, and I was traveling, and the citizen on patrol turned his blue light on, and I didn't stop immediately. I stopped about, about 3/4 of a mile down the road. I pulled in because I was near my destination to my daughter's house, and I pulled in the driveway, and I asked the cop if he what was his probable cause of stopping me. He never gave me that. Asked for his identification. He never gave me any of that. He kept asking me for my identification. Asked him, why did he need my identification? I'm just traveling. Say I'm not a driver. I let him know that I was operating in my constitutional right to travel. He continued on in that manner. And he asked me to roll my window down. I didn't. I said, because I had my key out the car, I said, I can't roll it down. At that time, he put the, I had my window down 6 inches. I gave him the registration to the automobile I was traveling in, and he was asking for a license. Like I said, I told him I didn't have it. That time, he took and put his arm into the window of the automobile that I was traveling in. He put his arm through the window, and he tried to open the door, or roll the window down or something, and it hit me in my face. It was no big thing. He just brushed past my face when he did that. I had my key sitting on my knee. So at that time, I took my hand and I grabbed the key and I put it in the ignition. Him and the other guy said, don't move the car. At the time, he has me blocked in. I got a garage door in front of me and the police car is behind me. I had my cell phone, and I was recording at the time also. I don't want to call him a gentleman, but the cop, then his partner put a taser through the window and said, don't move the car, don't move the car. I was like, where am I going to go? I said, so at that time when he took his hand out of the window, I turned my key forward and rolled the window up. And I told him that I had cooperated with him. I said, you have not identified yourself. I said, anybody can have a blue light on their car. I said, I did cooperate. You didn't want to give me your identification or anything. And so I'm no longer cooperating. I said, I'm going to sit here. And I sat there. And some more policemen came. And they came and subsequently, they busted the window out and pulled me out through the window. They went in and searched the car and found my cell phone that had been recording. They took the cell phone. I had two phones. They took one. They took both of them and brought them back to me in the car, in the police cruiser that I was in the back of. One of them, he realized that wasn't the one I was recording on. And so he took that and put it back. He brought my wallet out of the car. I didn't ask for that, my daughter and her mother were standing there watching this. I asked the police officer if he had, I asked him, did he have a video camera on his cruiser? And he said, no, he didn't have that. So I'm like, wow, you know, I thought I was good with that, you know. And they took my phone. The gentleman took my phone. He took me to one police precinct, and I sat there for a few hours. Then he took me to another precinct across town, in the same county, to where the jail is. He did not enter my telephone in evidence in the first place he went. He did not enter it in the evidence at the jail where he left me. He took the phone and went somewhere else with it. I don't know if the information is still in the phone or not. And they wouldn't let me have my phone. I don't know how to get my property back. I really don't want it anymore after they've had it, and who knows what they've done to it or what kind of technology they done put on my phone or whatnot. But, you know, I need to pay for my phone. I went to court. They locked me up. I was in jail for a couple weeks. I ended up getting out because they wouldn't let me out unless I had a public defender. When they had me on the video arraignment, I stood up and I said, "I am Baron Captain Bay. I am a natural person, and that's far as I could get. I'll sit down. I don't want to hear that. You know, I don't talk to you no more." So they wouldn't let me have nothing. So I had to get a public defender. They ordered a public defender upon me. And, you know, I never signed for this. I never asked for this guy or nothing. But he got me out of jail, okay, was able to get me a bond or something because they weren't going to release me. Oh, also, when I was in the first place that they took me from, they put me before the magistrate, and the magistrate said, "Okay, come on in here, let me give you your rights." And I said, you know, because I know a little bit, and I said, "Well, you know, from what I understand about the law, you don't have any rights to give me. I have inalienable rights that's endowed to me by my Creator." He didn't want to give me no bond. He didn't want to talk to me no more. So every time, you know, you step to these people and you give them the right stuff, you know, they kind of shut you down in a way. Now, I ended up getting out, okay, and when I went to court, the public defender that was with me, I had some papers that I had submitted some paperwork into the court already by mail, and I had gave him some paperwork that I had submitted and some other stuff that I needed him to submit if he was going to work with me, because I talked to him about what my case was about, and he said he worked with me on that, and he understood that I felt like he was the enemy, but he was going to have to assign something and make sure that I was in his best interest. And
I'm going to ask you a question, though, Boo. I'm going to ask you this question. Did you have insurance?
Did I have insurance?
Yes.
On the automobile?
That's the only thing I could be talking about, family. I'm with you 100%.
The car was insured. It belonged to my mother.
All right, but I'm saying the car was insured.
It was.
All right, listen to me carefully, not to interrupt your flow, because this is something that you need to be aware of. You have to get the vehicle traffic. Which you in? This happened in Virginia.
This happened in Virginia with North Carolina registered vehicle.
All right. You have to get the Virginia vehicle traffic law. It's very important. All right. The VTL, vehicle traffic law. Every state has it. All right. You can go to motor vehicle, and you can get the booklet. You know, book. You know what I'm saying? In New York, they want $2.50. For the book, vehicle traffic law. I don't know what it's going to cost in other states. Every state seems to have their own administrative course. But listen to me carefully.
Yes.
There was a more that I know. He got similar treatment that you received, and this happened in New Jersey. And, of course, the more, you know, finally got out of jail and he had to go back to court. He had about 5 or 6 tickets that was placed on him and on the car. Combination of both. The more wiped all that out, because of the fact that he had insurance. Because of the fact that he had insurance more. Because what you're going through, brother, you should have never gone through that. Because if there's insurance on that car, that means that the state has been indemnified from any liabilities that the officer is claiming. Because the question is, what was the charge? And if there was a charge, the fact that if there was an they have a claim, you have insurance. And how you know this is true? Because anytime there's an accident, your insurance go up. Or if the officer writes you a ticket, your insurance go up. All right? So insurance covers the whole nine. This is why I be telling Moores that, you know, even though you travel in your land vessel, you should get a bond. If you don't get the state insurance, which is difficult to get, especially when you're traveling in your private capacity, the point is that you need to get some kind of bond because it's what you call a self-insurance. You could be self-insured, all right? In vehicle traffic law in the state of New York, you could be self-insured. Most people are not aware of that, and you could most likely be self-insured in any state, all right? As long as you get a bond and cover or insurance to cover whatever, you know, the conveyance that you're traveling in, all right, that means that the state is indemnified for any liabilities. So if anything happened, nobody, you know, no, the state can't be held liable for any suit. So, brother, you definitely have a lawsuit because there's no way that an officer should be coming off on you like that, especially when you, the state is indemnified because the conveyance was insured. And I just had to put that out there, brother. You have a lawsuit.
All right. Now, I also want to mention
thing, hold on a minute. I always try to tell people, and I've been successful in dealing with quite a few people, you want to go to your spa shop because what these guys are doing now, they're aware of the fact that the spa shop, these guys are aware people are videotaping by phone and stuff, and they're confiscating people's phones, destroying phones and all kind of stuff. You get you a little dash cam, and they got these little miniature audio and video cameras that you can put. It's small enough to even put on your keychain. You mount one in the windshield. We even had one where this young lady, this man and his wife's daughter, was being abused in school, and they put one around her neck, and she was able to record the abuse, put it on a DVD disc, and send it to the school board, and all hell broke loose. They sold over $200,000. So when you're out there riding, you want to make sure you got evidence, but you want to have evidence that they are unaware of. See, you can mount one of these little bitty tiny things that's so small, you can just stick it right on your door, on the passenger door, so it'll aim right straight at the driver's window. You can get this guy's name, his badge number, all this information. And then you have evidence that can be presented before a federal grand jury. Okay, that's all I want to add. You had something else to say before I go into the next call?
Yeah, I did have something else to say. When we went to court, the documents that I gave to the public defender, after we talked to the judge, we stepped outside because he had to talk to me about some things because I was trying to get my phone back. He left his briefcase and the documents on the bench. The police officer took those documents and left the courtroom and walked right past us. He went down to the DA's office, asked him, are these the documents that this gentleman submitted to the court? Then he proceeded to leave the courthouse for about 2 or 3 hours until the public defender called his precinct and said he was going to be dead in dire straits if he didn't show back up with those documents. And I actually had the public defender removed from the case because he was a party to the case then.
Okay. So we have a police officer just turned cold criminal. Grand theft and all. Okay, so that's one all the reason why you have to understand law and stuff, and always remember, no evidence, no case. You got evidence on these guys that you can present that they, you can bring and take it and present it before a jury. You bring these guys down.
Yes.
Now, you got another question, brother, before we go on to the next man?
I wanted to ask the brother's name that gave out his telephone number because I missed that. I missed that part of the show. I've only been on since 7:30, and I missed his name.
Yes.
Welcome to the call.
Come back to you, Nobles. K-E-M-I-T-U. Come back to you, and, of course, my title is Bay, and my telephone number is 347-626-1357. That's 347-626-1357.
Okay, that's great. I'll be giving you a call myself tomorrow. Sometime we don't have to discuss anything.
Yeah, tomorrow evening, because I'm gonna be out all day in the morning, running back and forth in court, different jurisdictions. So tomorrow evening around 6 or 7, it would be good.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, brother. Also, brother, I just did a broadcast last night on Drive a License versus Freedom Rights to Travel. You might want to check that out as well. We're going to go on to the next caller. We're going to deal with area code 706.
Having a double job this overhead, you think that? That's why I'm in for high demand.
Area code 706. We can hardly hear you.
They make 46,000. No, about 5 weeks, 5 days, out. Like that.
Brother, you're breaking up on us. Okay. Area code 240. Come on in.
Hey, peace, brother. How you doing? This is Brother Dao calling. I have two questions, and that'll be it. One was dealing with my nephew. He's on house arrest. I mean, he's not on house arrest no more. He's on probation. What happened was a friend of the family asked my nephew to go and drive her son back home because he was intoxicated or whatever. And so my nephew drove with him. And they got popped with marijuana. He had marijuana in the car when my nephew was driving. So he paying the state of Ohio $5,000. He had to pay $5,000 and 3-year probation. I think they give him a felony he got 3-year probation. He done 1 year already. What the brother was talking about the CUSA number, I still can locate the CUSA number for that, too, as well, because I know the judge is double-dipping on that whole case.
That's true. You can. You can, again, as I said before, you can use the CUSA number in any circumstances as far as that case is concerned. It can be a credit card case. It could be a bankruptcy case. It could be a child support case, family court case. The case in reference to what you're referring to, you know, you can look up the CUSA number on any one of those cases because in that CUSA, it will show, when you pull that CUSA on that case, it will show the judge who's assigned to that case to show that he has pecuniary interest, all right? And you can find out how much the fund – how much did that case generate in that fund? You know what I'm saying, brother? So it's the same thing applied.
Do we have to hire somebody to look up CUSA's number to get that?
No, you don't have to hire nobody. There's a procedure on doing that. I know where that could be done at. Basically, the CUSA number. At one time, you could have went to Fidelity.com and you could have looked up the case to get your CUSA number on the case. But as the system said in Texas, they have shut that down, so you don't have access to that no more. So unfortunately, it's going to cost money to get the CUSA number on that case. It's worth it because, again, you know, it's going to get him out of a situation, all right, as far as making any payment. And then, that money's owed to him because that's his account. They open up an account in his name. So that means there's money's in that account that's in surplus that belongs to him.
Okay, I had to mute the brother's mic. I'm going to open it up back up again. Yes, hold on.
Since he's on probation, do I don't want to mess with that right now, or should I wait till he's finished because I don't want them to pull him?
It doesn't matter, brother. It doesn't matter when you want to do it. I mean, you looking at it, oh, I don't want to mess with that right now. Cause it, no, brother, listen, you can do that at any kind of time you want to do that. I mean, to me, what you're saying, you're sending a different signal, because that's really when the time you want to do it. Because the point is that, you know, it's almost like you're saying, well, if I do that right now, I'm going to get in trouble. Well, you're going to get in trouble. No, brother, that's not the message you want to send, brothers and sisters.
Okay.
What you want to do is get the QSUP number on the case while he's still on the case, because that's when they do it to him. Even if the case is over with. Say, for instance, the case is over with 5 years ago or 10 years ago or 20 years ago, you can still get the QSUP number and still look into that case and see how much money they had generated. So you should do it while the case is still open and alive, brother.
Okay. One more thing, and I'm going to get off the okay, my situation is they garnishing my paycheck, a second mortgage company. What happened was I sent them some validation, and they went down to the courthouse and got a writ on me without even me getting even a just due to come down there to defend myself. And they are getting a garnishment of $75 a week out of my paycheck. They just gave him a writ on me to send to my employer that I work for, and they garnishing my check. And they've been doing that for a while, for like 2 years now.
For a mortgage, is what you're saying?
Yeah, a second mortgage.
Oh, wow. That's interesting, brother, because was the first mortgage foreclosed on?
No, I'm still in my house now. What happened? I sent them a promissory note, and about a couple of years ago, you know, I was doing the UCC stuff. I sent them a promissory note, and I said, I'm going to give you 30 days to respond. So instead of then, he went down there to the court people, and the people down here is like these boule Negroes in these court buildings. I live in Maryland on the D.C. line, but he went down there, and he got a writ on me, and they are garnishing my check. So I know the same thing about getting the QSUP number. I should be able to offset that, too, as well.
That's true, too, but you don't need the QSUP number to offset that also, because there's some other issues that you need to be aware of, because apparently there's some debt that was claimed against you. But we don't have too much time on the phone, because you know, we get to every caller and spending about 10, 20 minutes on the phone, you know,
okay,
before you know it, time is over with. So you can call me at 347-626-1357.
1357 or 47?
Yes. 347, area code 347, 626-1357.
Okay, 1357.
And that's tomorrow. Make sure you call me tomorrow in the evening, late in the evening, because I'm going to be out during the day.
Okay.
All right?
Mm-hmm. So I'll call you and we'll discuss this
in detail, and I can show you what you have to do.
Brother. Appreciate it.
Okay, brother.
All right, go on to
the next one. All right.
All right.
Peace. Okay. Area code 561. Come on in. Area code 561. Oh, okay. Come on, sister.
Hello?
Hello? I hear you. Come on.
You can hear me?
Yeah, we hear you loud and clear.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I really didn't know I was queued in, but I got into the show late, and I just pretty much really was wondering if you would mind giving me a review, like a short review, so I can catch up on what you guys were talking about.
Okay, we're talking about federal and civil procedures and dealing with the court. I'm going to let my brother commit to you, Bray, bring you up to speed about this thing. Go ahead, brother.
Yeah, it was about, let me see now, because right now it's about, what, 8:30? All right, 8:32
yeah,
to be exact. All right, Eastern Standard Time it is, because, you know, I don't know where you're located at, but that's Eastern Standard Time on my time on the East Coast. And
okay,
of
well,
course,
I have a better question for you guys if you can't catch me up real quick. I was just wondering about the Moorish American laws, like for your government and how that works within the U.S.
Okay. Well, since I'm a minister for the Moorish American government, and what I do personally is I follow the teachings of the prophet. The prophet said, don't flash your ID before Europeans. So what I do is I was born a Moor. And so therefore, when it comes to commerce and contract law, I study commerce, I study contract law in the history of the United States. So I'm able to play the game successfully. I'll walk into a courtroom if they would ever let me in there. I always beat them, take the teeth out the door before I ever go there. But if I ever had to go in there, I'll look like a Moor. But I'm gonna take their stick and use that stick on them. So I encourage brothers and sisters to understand this commerce game that they're playing. The Federal Civil Procedures, Administrative Procedures, the Administrative Remedy, all of this goes along with their system because we are you're more. That's your nationality. Okay.
Yeah.
But now we have a commerce game. If you go to MoorishAmericanGov.org and you put your information on the census form and you dial into the national conference calls and you get to know your government and your government get to know you, that's where you want to keep that at. You want to keep that with your government. But when it comes to this system, this beast that this man has out here, you want to understand this game. See, we understand baseball, football, and we know the rules and regulations, all these games. But now it behooves us to try to understand the commerce game and how to play, and learn the rules and regulations of that so that we can stop being a victim and a debtor and stop being a creditor and a winner.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay, and that's what I'm trying to get some understanding because I did do the census on the website and everything, but I just... You know, I call in and I listen because I want more clarification on what's going on because when I talk about things, I don't want to sound like an idiot. So that's why I'm trying to get some clarification on, you know, everything pretty much.
All right. Well, my advice would be to you to stay tuned in to the broadcast and listen to previous shows and stuff of that nature. That way... you can learn because I deal a lot with law. Last night I did a broadcast on driver license versus freedom of rights to travel.
Yeah, I tuned
you know.
That one. That was a really good one. I liked that.
Okay. Well, what I try to do is I try to put information out there for you all so that you all could take notes on this stuff and so you'll be able to defend yourself against these people. But tonight... we're dealing with federal and civil procedure. I try to get my brother in here every Sunday so that he can tell you how to actually handle yourself on the floor in dealing with these people inside these courtrooms. Okay? Do you have another question?
Yes, one more question. I have a friend of mine. This should go with your show. I hope it does. I have a friend of mine who had an incident with the police, and they pretty much threatened him and told him they would make his life much worse than what it could be because when they got pulled over, it was him and two other people. But, you know, there's always the one person mouthing off, being a smart mouth with the officers and everything. So what they said to him was, okay, we'll make your life more difficult. And he had been looking for a job, couldn't get one. And finally one day, something just told him to pull up his record. And on his record, they had put that he was a child molester, not in those exact words, but it was something to do with child molesting. And it was the same incident with the same officers that pretty much put this on his case. So what I'm wondering is, how can we, you know, get this expunged off his case? Because, for one, it's false, and two, what can we do to make sure this doesn't happen to anyone else? Because that's something serious.
Well, listen to this, sis, and it is something serious. First of all, I have to know what state that this occurred at, so that way I can see the language and statute for this brother's relief, all right? Because I'm dealing with cases now with a couple of people whose names are in the state register arbitrarily and capricious from a decision that was made, and we're in the middle of appealing that case because of the fact that allegations is made with somebody else that's false and there's never been proven. And so, and it is damaging because it's keeping this individual from her getting a job in her profession. You know what I'm saying? But I would have to first know what state this person is in, all right, so that way I can go into the laws of that state, statutes, and see exactly what's going on. And also, I know that in New York State, when an officer accused someone of something, it's under the penalty of perjury that the officer is supposed to make his statement, and they call that punishable written statement, all right? And that's basically what this individual have. He has a false punishable written statement by this officer under the penalty of perjury, who had perjured himself as an officer to launch this defamation of character against him. So, again, I would have to know what state he's in and also what county he's in, so that way I can be accurate of how to be able to help that brother. Again, I would have to give my number out in order to communicate, because time is of the essence. You know, we don't get that much time on the show, and it takes a lot more than what I'm expressing. So my number, again, is 347-626-1357. You can reach me at that number tomorrow evening. You know, you can give me a call, because tonight, after I get off this call, I got a motion pleading to put together. And tomorrow, all day, during the day, I'm going to be in and out of courts, running back and forth, doing research. So tomorrow evening, you can call me at that number.
All righty. Thank you.
All right, sister. Look at this here. Shut down. Okay, our brother, we're going to be doing a broadcast here. And, well, I'm going to gather up all the brothers and sisters that will actually be here in Jacksonville teaching. And when I put this thing together, we're gonna have them all on the call so that everybody will understand what the summit is about before they come to Jacksonville. So I'm going to try to get them all together and broadcast this before the actual event occurs. So keep your eyes open for that. I'll send you an update and I'll let you know when it is, and then, you know, once I do up the show and everything. And but now, ladies and gentlemen, if we have anyone else out there with a question, now's the time to raise your hand. I'm going over here to area code 904 one more time. 904.
Hello.
Hello, sister. Got a lot of background noise. They hear you.
Okay, I'm listening live. How you doing?
I'm just fine. Let us have it.
Okay, I'm calling about a case back in 2006. I actually have two cases. One is in 2006 where I was arrested for a false charge, but the attorney that I hired, he was, like, working with the state, so he coerced me into pleading no contents.
Well, one thing I want to say quickly, sis, is that when you said that the attorney was working with the state, that's correct. I don't know no attorney that's not going to work with the state, because remember, he is an officer of the state, and that's just to be his duty to compel himself to the state, all right? And so these attorneys are not going to really operate in our best interest, all right?
Exactly.
So that's unfortunate, but apparently there seems to be what you call it's ineffective of counsel, because the attorney was acting incompetent for you to put in a plea of no contest. That's damaging, even though he may be aware that these charges that you received was false, all right?
Yeah, exactly.
And so he can be held accountable for that, sis. You know, I mean, that's all
and
I can
he told
say.
Me, first he told me to take 6 months, and then when I told him I was going to, you know, hire somebody else after he had to put my money, then he told me, well, I get it, just withhold justification. And I'm like, I've never been in trouble with the law. Why would, you know?
Yeah,
and,
that's what they do to us.
It's affecting me from jobs when I'm trying to get jobs and stuff. It keep popping up.
Wow. I mean, it's just, well, I'm working on a project that's going to try to help our brothers and sisters, because that's another problem that we're having, that, you know, once we get caught up in this criminal justice system, because that's exactly what the justice system is, it's criminal, all right, criminal minds that put this together to continue to take advantage of our brothers and sisters in these systems. This is how they feed their machination, all right,
mm-hmm.
the Democrats
mm-hmm.
and Republican system. This is how they keep feeding on us. But we need to have some kind of economic infrastructure into play, and that's what the summit is about in Florida.
Yeah, because I had no knowledge of anything because I had never been in trouble. I didn't know nothing, you know. And he took advantage of that.
Well, listen to this. You all represent so many millions of our brothers and sisters out there who can become a victim to this criminal justice system because, again, a lot of us do not know, all right? Like my daughter, she didn't know, all right? She got caught out there with some situation, and I made an arrangement with her to pay back the bank for something that she got caught up in some fraud, but she was upset, and I couldn't understand my daughter's position because she's a pastry chef, all right? She works for one of the top restaurants in the country. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And, again, she was naive and didn't know anything. She should have been calling me to contact me. You know what I'm saying? Of course, she's a young woman, you know,
mm-hmm.
22. And of course, you know, at that age, a lot of us still don't know no better. It's, to me, 22 is almost like being at the age of a two-year-old to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, you know, you're just coming out of high school. You know what I'm saying? And you don't know this world. You don't know this empire of treachery that you could be subjugated to. You could be subjugated to anything that's out there. And I had to make an arrangement that she pays the bank back without them giving any charge. And so so she's happy that she's not being charged so she can go back to work. But unfortunately, the person who committed the fraud on her is getting away with the crime, you know, and this is what goes on, you know. And I told her, I said, well, listen, if you didn't make the payment, make this payment arrangement, they would have shown up and put the charge on you.
Exactly.
We're going to want to make somebody pay for it.
They're very crooked in my city. I was going to Bono's to get me something to eat, and the lady trying to force me to pay more money for something, and, you know, they pretty much screwed up my order because the people are racist at that Bono's on Lane Avenue, and so I told her I didn't want it and give me my money back. Well, it was a state trooper one car behind a car, you know, like a car in the middle of us, and I didn't pay no attention because I have on my seatbelt. I'm not bothering anybody. I'm in my SUV, but it has, like, very light tint with rims, of course, and everything else. I don't know what she told the state trooper, but as soon as I got up on the highway, he pulled me over. And I said, officer, why are you pulling me over? I'm pulling you over because you have your seatbelt on improper. And I'm like, huh? So I called the state trooper. I had them pull the tape and everything else, and they're like, don't worry about it. Well, I took it to court. When I went to court, the judge threw out every ticket that he even gave me. And throughout all the court crosses, as if they had been called, you know, prior to me coming to court or something. It was, like, amazing. Everybody was looking like, what in the world, you know? And so the state trooper on Normandy, they claimed that they were going to have this thing fully investigated. They're going to call me back. And I said, I want something in writing so I know that something has been done because I know he pulled me over for no reason. There's no such thing as improperly having your seatbelt on. And I just don't, you know, like that on my license. Cause I know it was just DWB. And, They never called me back. They never did anything. They had all these captains, about four different sergeants calling me from Orlando, calling me from this place, that place. Nobody ever did nothing. I never heard anything back. It's almost a year going on. They coming out. They was going to send me correspondence through the mail and kept getting my addresses and kept getting my statement over and over, which it never changed because I never lied, and I never heard anything.
Well, you know, only one thing that's missing out of that whole scenario, sis, is a lawsuit because what our people need to hear is that – once we wind up winning your case and get it thrown out, you can definitely go sue. Even if the case is going on, you can still go sue. You know what I'm saying? Because, see, they're suing you, but
they
we
kept
sue
calling
them back.
Me. They kept calling me back apologizing. They kept calling back apologizing.
All right. I'm trying to articulate something to you, since we don't mind. What I'm saying is that was defamation of character. And
mm-hmm.
you should not have let that go by without suing these people. See, what I'm saying, sis, and for those people listening, we have to start getting in the habit of holding these people accountable. How do you hold these people accountable? All right?
Yep.
We're not just talking about writing to their superior officer, filing a civilian complaint, you know, checking out, filing a complaint with the Internal Affairs. Yes, all that is said, well, good and done, yes. But how you really hold them accountable is to bring suit. We have to get in the habit of suing them. As they sue us, we have to sue them. Because when they charge you, since that was a lawsuit against you from them, right?
Okay,
and so now you have to sue them. So you need
to
sue them.
Do I still have time?
Sis, I don't know what state you're in.
I'm in Florida.
All right, because matter of fact, I'm coming down to Florida. But the point is,
yeah, Jacksonville.
Yes, I'll be down there. But the point is, what I'm saying is that, you know, our brothers and sisters are in different states, you know, and so, you know, there's 50 states or more, and so wherever we at, you know, I got to look at the statutes there to see what is the time limit, because up here in New York, you have to put in what you call the notice of claim. All right, down in Florida, I don't know if they do notice of claim. Notice of claim is something where you draft up your complaint, or your claim, rather, and you give it to the comptroller, all right? The comptroller is the one who deals with the city finances, all right?
Okay.
So if you got a claim against the city for an agency that did damage to you, you file a notice of claim with the comptroller office. Down there where you at, maybe something different. I know that when I was in Georgia, they wouldn't seem to give me that information about where I found my claims at. Everybody seemed like they was acting dumb. Yeah, because they don't want their county or their city to be liable to any actions that's being brought against them. So I have to look into that for you, sis, and see.
Okay.
All right?
Because this is not the first time either. They put me over my Escalade at gunpoint. They thought I was my mom, mistaken identity, and they had me on the ground. Like I was a convict or something.
You got to sue them, sis. You got to get in the habit of suing these people, because once you start suing them, they're going to leave you alone, because what happened is that they get funding for that. They get funding. What they're doing to you, they get funding. And once you start taking away their funding, guess what? They're going to slow down and making moves against you, because why? They can't afford to lose their funding, because once they lose their funding, they shut down. They can't operate.
Wow, I'm so happy I talked to you guys. I'm getting on that first date Monday morning.
All right, now I don't know if you was on at the time that I was trying to tell the brother that come over here, but you want to go, if you're in Jacksonville with me, go over there on the south side, put a little spy shop, and get the little miniature audio and video cameras that you can mount inside your vehicle and start capturing this information. Use your little USB port. Upload it to your computer and put this stuff on down on your disk, and then you can start using this as evidence in a court so you can sue them so there ain't no way out. The evidence is plain audio and video.
Okay.
These little cameras, they put one around your neck, put one on your dash, you call it dash cam. Especially put one in your back windshield, because once an officer cut on his light on you, he's declaring an emergency. Okay, now you're recording him declaring an emergency. When he come up to that window, you ask him if you are, excuse me, sir, am I being detained or am I free to go? Could you please tell me what the emergency is? If he asks you for a driver's license, he asks you for property that belongs to the state. Could you ask him please show me, provide me with the name and address of the company that's paying me, because I'm operating Freedom of Rights for Travel and Commerce. Get it all on audio. And video.
Wow, yes, great. Right. And I also asked them for their camera when he pulled me over, and they never produced that to me as well.
No, they told me they were going to get it to me. No, no, I already remember one thing. See, we have a bad habit. We keep asking for freedom and justice and equality in America. You can't do that. If you want freedom, justice, and equality in America, you're going to have to take it. So go get the cameras, get the evidence. Have it mounted in there. They even got one that you put on your keychain. It's so small. Put one around your neck. We had this little girl put one around her neck. And they are people from the school system called crime. Please, Lord have mercy. Y'all going to take my job. I'm going to lose my job. The whole city was in an uproar over that thing.
And what's the name of the place I need to go to get it?
It's a little spot shop right there on go out there and reach. Get on your computer, because they're all over the country.
Okay.
And look up the spot shop. And they got another one called, what is that? I think it's nightvisionguys.com. And they specialize in night scopes and stuff, rifles and stuff. They have that stuff, too. And when you got the evidence, then you got them. Don't argue with them. Don't argue with them.
Okay.
Because a lot of them guys out there, they actually think the first thing they'll tell you is this. Florida law says that if you are driving, you got to have a driver's license. When they tell me that, I always tell them you are absolutely correct. If I'm driving, I need a driver's license. So I need you to provide me with the company, name and address of the company that's paying me to drive.
I know that's right, sir. This is such a blessing. I know that's right.
Okay, well, see, that's how I do them. I shut them down now. Because they here the first time I created a tag on my computer and put it on the back of my truck. I created identification on my computer, put it in a book, and got out there on the pavement. I put that truck everywhere except in the police front shirt pocket. Finally, one of them stopped me. When they stopped me, we were running around. The brother, it was a black cop and a white cop. The brother said, "Man, look here, I need to talk to you." He said, "I ain't never seen nothing like this. It's plain as me." I said, "Okay. First of all, you see your partner right there?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "He ain't got no history." I said, "You do." I said, "Everything he, everywhere he ever went, on his earth, he done does something." I said, "Now, I explained the thing about the moors and all this right here to him guys." He said, "Well, look, I'm going to write you a ticket." I said, "Well, the ticket's going to have your name at the bottom of it, ain't it?" He said, "Yes, it is." I said, "Okay. Well, let me get your badge number to go along with that. If y'all don't mind, let me get your tag number, too. And because I ain't interested in y'all. I want the man that got you out here." So what I did is I drew up a 21-point affidavit. Sent a certified mail with a return receipt to the sheriff. Letting them know I need $4,000 for each one of these points right here. Put me and my family members on a no-stop list. After that, I didn't go no further. But after that, me and the popo ride bubble to bubble. I turn right, he turn left. But no more cutting on no more lights. When they see me, they be like, "Oh, my goodness, here come God. Whoop, whoop, get out of the way."
Okay, well, I ain't going to talk y'all too much, but this is such a wonderful, I could be on this phone for hours. I need to come volunteer for y'all because it's a shame how they're getting over in my city, and it's ran by people that are very corrupt, and they just get pulled over the other day, too, for DWB, and it's because of the vehicles that I drive. They're stereotyping me. They're thinking that I'm a male and that I'm into stuff that I'm not, and I'm just a regular single mom, just working. You know, and I'm just tired of them to keep doing that. And he pulled me over, and he said that I was going, I think he said that I was going 60 in a 45 zone, but he going to be easy on me and give me a 9-mile ticket. And I wasn't even going there but 5 miles, and that's legal, supposedly. He was just mad because he couldn't find nothing of dirt on me, and I wasn't who he thought I was because of the neighborhood that I was leaving out of. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm just tired of him. I want to interject something to you all. You need to be aware of this, too. When you see these signs, mileage sign, like 40 miles an hour, 30 miles an hour, and you get a ticket, this is something that you need to be aware of, too, family. You need to check out the State Department of Transportation. The State Department of Transportation is what you need to check out. You need to give them the location where the sign is at between whatever two blocks or avenue or lane or place or whatever, boulevard, or how you want to describe this sign is at. And you can find out from the State Department of Transportation, because every state have a Department of Transportation. You can find out if that sign has been regulated within that county, within that city, all right? Because what I found out in my research that a lot of these signs that's being put up is the city putting these signs up arbitrarily to the state. The state don't know that these signs are being put up by the city. The city cannot put them signs up if it's not regulated by the state. So a lot of these cities and municipalities are putting up these signs and they're pulling people over, giving them tickets, and coming to find out when you do the research that those signs are not regulated by the state, but yet the state is receiving funding. So you'd be surprised that the states are receiving billions of dollars of funds from the municipality, all right, because of the fact that they're stopping people, pulling them over, giving them tickets arbitrarily, and that sign may not even be regulated. So that means that if they want to play those games, again, we need to find out if that particular sign hasn't been regulated by the State Department of Transportation,
All right? You can do it on the Freedom Information Request. Request their information. You make sure the information you give them is accurate so they can give it back to you in writing. All right? And once you do that, this is how you shut them down. You can file a lawsuit and have an investigation against the precinct for every sign that they had gave a ticket for. All right? And the reason why I'm saying this is because I've shown this in class with an affidavit from the Department of Motor Vehicle from the legal department showing that the Bureau of Motor Vehicle, the Vehicle and the Traffic Bureau do not exist in the city of Mount Vernon. All right? But yet, at the same time, they give a ticket.
I certainly appreciate it, but we're going to have to shut it down now. But ladies and gentlemen, we will be back again and dropping some more information because the time has expired, and I'm going to have to close down. But I certainly thank you, and I will be getting back in touch with you because we got some things to talk about. And until next time, you've been listening to Brother Kamitu Ube and me, Tahaka Mana El Bay on Morris Talk Live 100. Good night, ladies and gentlemen.